I'm going to start this at the end, quoting the closing paragraph of an op-ed piece written by my guest on today's episode of Africa State of Mind, open quotes. I'll tell them that on a bright summer night in St. Petersburg, our super eagles gave so much more heart than our government, country, or world has displayed in years. And to me, that will always be something to be proud of, because if there's anything this world desperately needs more of at this time in our history, it's human beings with a little more heart. Close quote. The last 10 years have been a sort of renaissance for Africa, where internally we've seen a shift in terms of mindset, especially young Africans, but globally too, the world has realized that they need Africa. Arguably, music and popular culture has led this entire revolution, and Nigeria undoubtedly has been a leader in this field. My guest on today's episode of Africa State of Mind, Banky W, is right in the middle of this. If he isn't reshaping the music industry with his music and winning awards and just parting new ways for people, and also being credited for actually signing people like Wizkid to his label, he's featuring on high-grossing movies like The Wedding Party. If he isn't one of the most followed people on social media in Africa, he's hosting stages around the world like One Africa Fest. If he isn't cooking, and pretty well because I tasted it at Chin's birthday party, he's writing well-thought-out pieces. If he isn't invited to do a reading at Jay-Z's launch for the 4444, he's hosting President Macron at the Shrine in Nigeria. And to think this all started when he dared to pack his bags and move back to Nigeria way before it was popular. And it seems that there's no stopping him at all. He is the definition of changing the African narrative. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Olubankole Wellington, a.k.a. Mr. Banky W. He didn't just come to sound register, he came to play. Banky!
Wow, I should take you when I'm going to shows.
I'm telling you, I'll be like the hype person.
I was like, oh, who's this guy?
How are you doing, Banky?
Thank you. That was very nice. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
I'm really so excited to have you on the show. So I was trying to think of a way to what my opening question would be. And as I was doing research, as I mentioned when we were offline, was that I realized that between me and you, we've actually worked together quite a lot. So I thought, do I start with a story about O News Kenya, you hosting the Channel O Awards, the NYU screening of Mercy, the Breakfast Club show, the Future Awards when we were backstage, Chin's birthday dinner.
We've been together at some key moments.
At key moments. The Ghana Music Awards, if you remember.
Yeah,
lots of key moments. And then I thought that this is the great story to start with. I don't know if you're going to remember this, and I hope that my memory doesn't fail me. Mm-hmm. It was when I just joined on as head of Channel O Africa, and Chin had thrown the party for Channel O at the mansion. Do you remember? And afterwards, because I think that this introduces your one of your aliases, Mr. Lagos Party, very well. So anyway, after this party, we went to an after party, so to speak. And then I remember you said specifically to me, it was you, it was Lynx, it was Obi, it was Chin, and then you said to me, Leslie, so you're not going to let me make your Hennessy? I said, what? And Chin is like,
you're not going to let me what?
Mix your drink. Do you remember? And I was like,
okay.
I was like, no, Banky. Then you said, just one. You have to taste one drink that I'll mix. Just one. And I was like, okay.
I remember this. Yeah.
I'm like, enter Mr. Lagos Party. Banky, welcome to Africa State of Mind. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you so much for having me, man. You just took me back. That was a good day. That was a good day.
It was a really good day.
Now, I tend to be the bartender when I'm amongst friends.
Yeah, and I'm not a drinker.
I'm the guy that wants everybody to be good. Yeah. I'm the caretaker and the bartender.
Yeah, you make sure everybody's happy, which is all good. Now, Banky, now before you became all of these incredible things that you are, you know, and everything, you had quite a few interesting jobs. I think one of them was selling knives or something like that. Talk to us about some of your humble beginnings.
Oh, man. I've had a very interesting work career. My first job was in McDonald's. I was working the grill in McDonald's. after that, I kind of bounced around a bit, did a lot of retail, you know, clothing stores. At one point, I was a knife salesman, and you had to kind of call people and make these pitches to sell these really expensive knives. But I didn't last very long because I didn't think that the knives were, like, that's where I decided that I would only sell things that I believe in, because I thought the knives were too expensive, and somebody bought like the most expensive set, and I couldn't sleep at night. I was like, oh man, this is terrible. So I quit my job. I never went back.
Now, also just, I mean, with all of that, if I'm not mistaken, I think that your parents were very much like typical African parents, where they were not trying to have you go into the creative field. It was not, you know, and you had to kind of make a barter of sorts in order to do that.
Yeah. You know, my parents, and I tell young people now, because, you know, I know that the mindset amongst parents towards like entertainment and art has changed. Whereas back in the day, if you told your parents you were into music or, you know, fashion or anything like that, they would think that you were crazy because you had to be an engineer or, a lawyer or a doctor or something like that. So, you know, that's from the time that I come from. And I tell kids all the time, it's really from a place of love and concern because they just want to make sure their kids are okay. And to them, engineering and things like that represent that safety. So, you know, back in the day, my parents were a little nervous about me kind of quitting my job and coming into the music business. Mm. But to their credit, they gave me their blessing eventually after a lot of conversations. And, they couldn't be happier today, and I couldn't be either. And I love them. You know, they've been awesome. They've been a great support system.
It's always awesome how in retrospect we can just see that our parents always had our best interests at heart, you know? It's like it's always retrospect.
Yeah, I know. I think it's the older you get, you start to think more like them.
Exactly. Now, Banky, another thing, you know, that I did want to, you know, kind of get into in terms of your backstory. When you decided to move back to Nigeria, you know, because you were in Yankee, you know, let me just use, you were in Yankee
yeah,
and most.
Yankee. Turning into a Nigerian program, Leslie?
I'm telling you. And, you know, and obviously it, for most people, the whole idea was to stay in Yankee or to go there or whatever the case may be. You know what I mean? And you're like a passport holding member of the States and everything. What was the decision, especially back then? What was it that made you decide that you wanted to go back, to Nigeria to start out your music career? What was the trigger?
For me, it was, I was in the States. I had graduated. I was working in the engineering field, you know, and my job was good, but I had started kind of releasing music while I was in university, and that was growing and growing. And then at some point, I started kind of, you know, I started off making just, if you want to call it a Yankee R&B music. And then at some point, I came into people like LD and Two Face, you know, who were performing and doing things in the States. And, you know, we would link up and I would either open for them or you know, I just started listening to more of the music. And I just felt that this is what I had been missing all along. Like, this was me. This is where I was supposed to be. This was my calling. Like, I was supposed to be part of this group of people. Like, I wasn't in the right place, you know? And so I just felt like I wanted to be part of the scene back home. And then the music made its way into Nigeria to the point where I actually had my first major radio interview on the phone. I was still working in school, and a radio station from Nigeria called me to have that interview. They said, oh, we're playing your music. And so that just kept tugging at my heart. And, you know, the thing about destiny is, like, until you find your passion and your purpose and your destiny, you'll never really be satisfied. You'll never be happy. Mm. You know, you could be, I had a great job out of university. I was making a lot of money. I was making, you know, I want to call figures, but I was making a lot of money. But I was empty. Like, every day that I was in the office, I felt like my heart was supposed to be somewhere else. Mm. You know, I would be, you know, listening to Nigerian music, watching the news, you know, getting, you know, hearing that my song was being played. I was just unsatisfied. I was unfulfilled. And so I wrestled with the decision because, you know, obviously my parents and my siblings don't live in Nigeria. You know, they were all in the States or in other parts of the world. So I wrestled with the decision for a while. And then I eventually came to the point where I was like, you know what, if I don't try, if I don't say that I tried, then I'll never be happy. Mm. You know, I can live with trying and failing. I can't live with not trying at all.
Yeah.
And so that was the conversation I had with my folks. And I said, listen, I just have to do this now. Like, I'm not married. I don't have a kid. If I'm ever going to take this risk, you know, I'm only responsible for myself. And I have a degree, you know, so I can always come back and get a job or get a second degree. But I just need to get this out of my system to know that I gave this my full-time attention. And boy, am I glad that I did.
I think everybody's glad that you did, you know, because honestly, what I think about you the most, you know, just as you were speaking, you know, I feel that you're the kind of person who in the entertainment industry as a whole in Nigeria and to some degree around the continent, you're the person who always supports people as they come in. Like you know, there are very few people who have like the purest intentions, let me say, in life in general, but what my encounters with you have been, and I think why people tend to want to work with you and everybody has these long stories about Banky is because you literally are in it to support everybody else, and you have this mentality that as other people grow, you know what I mean, like it's like a benefit. So I think that's something that
absolutely
plays. I mean, is that something that you learned as a child? Because I know that you've got like a praying mom. I remember when she sent you a prayer while we were in Kenya. I was like, what are you doing? He said, I'm reading a prayer.
If she is nothing else, she is a prayer warrior.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, I think that I think it's a combination. You know, I think, yes, you know, parents have the utmost responsibility, especially in the beginning, to set their children on the right path. So, you know, I've always found it funny when people, you know, kind of point to the musicians or whatever, or the actors or whoever in society first. The actual role, that responsibility falls on the parents first. Like, your parents are your first role model. So it's the things that they instill in you that you grow from and you hopefully keep even as you grow older.
Mm.
So first it was the parents. And then I think it's also just a combination of life experiences shaping who you are and your mindset and your mentality and just the decisions you make for yourself.
Mm.
You know, the kind of person that you decide that you want to be. And so for me, I've always kind of, you know, sayings like we rise by lifting others. Like, I really believe those things. You know, I feel like God put me in a platform to be able to open that platform out to other people, to have other people kind of launch off and do what they want to do. And so for me, as soon as my dream started to come true, like, this was always part of the plan to, you know, help artists and producers, and pretty much, I have a theory that I try to make work in my life, which is that wherever I am and whoever I work with, they should be better off after we're done working together.
I like that.
You know, because I feel like that to me is like, success and greatness is not just about what you get, but it's also about what you give.
I love that.
And so if you can give to others or give back to your community or give back to your country, those are the things that I'm essentially obsessed with.
Yeah, sure. I really like that. And, you know, just, I mean, one of the successes that you've had in the music industry, which again is testament to you really pushing other people and supporting other people around you, was around EME. And I think that the story of EME has been told so many times. I think you guys are the most Googleable label in Africa. So we won't go into that. But I did want to go into two things around EME. The first thing about the fact, which I think is really powerful, the fact that EME was formed off a friendship. So your best friend Tunde is your business partner, and his older brother Shegu, let me speak in my Nigerian accent, or Shegu, and then
Shegu.
and then also, you know, I mean, I think it was last year where there was a shift with regards to what the business structure was going to be around EME. So if you could please tackle both of those.
So EME was started back when I was in my third year of university. I think this was like 2002, 2003. And Tunde was in university as well. So we started at that point. And the plan was always to start as a record label and then branch off into other kinds of businesses, and which is why we called it Empire Mate Entertainment, because the plan was to build an empire.
Mm.
And also an empire that other people could launch off and do their thing as well. So we started as a label, and that label was in existence in Nigeria from about 2008 to 2017. And then we started getting into other lines of business. We kind of had a shift in focus for a few reasons. We just, over the years, like, our focus changed, our revenue model changed, and, you know, we felt like we'd done what we were going to do in the record label business, at least for now. You know, and Wiz is one success story, but quite a few people that are working in the business now got their launch off of the EME platform.
Yeah.
You know, the Wiz Kids, the Scales, DJ Exclusive, even the managers behind the scenes like Osage, you know, Anuel, who was once a PA in EME, and now he's like a photographer. So, you know, we're grateful that as a label, a lot of people launched off into their careers, and we were able to be instrumental, or used by God, really, how I feel, in setting up multiple careers and in the successes that we did have. But then with time, we noticed that we had a major impact in other areas. So in the field of media and in a lot of the corporate clients that we worked with, we found out that we started getting involved in their marketing campaigns and their advertising campaigns and in, you know, just the launch of their products, you know, producing their events and things of that nature. And that started to be like what the business model was focused on and what was really bringing in the revenue. And so we made the decision that, you know, we did the label thing for almost 10 years and it was great. You know, we had some wins and, you know, we took our lumps, but we did good by and large. But I think that, you know, it's kind of, you know what I like to use? I like to use the story of Jay-Z with Roc Nation with Jay-Z with Rockefeller becoming Jay-Z with Roc Nation. You know, it's like you start off as a label, kind of like a crew, you know, and then you become a company, and then you realize that, you know what, there's so much more that this company should be doing, as opposed to just focusing on what's my next hit single. So we still have the business of talent management, but now we're not just limited to musicians. Now we work with actors, we work with OAP, the personality, people like Ibuka, my wife, Tools.
Your wife, say it again.
Yeah, my wife, hello. In case I didn't say that clear enough.
Yeah.
But now, you know, we feel like we're doing a lot more.
Yeah.
And our impact is much further than we've had as a record label. As a media company, we're helping corporates. We have some of the biggest companies in Nigeria that we work for, and we do some very good work for, and we're proud of that. And at the end of the day, it's about impact, right? So it was never supposed to be just about hit songs. It was supposed to be about impact, and that's what we're doing.
And I really love the fact, that you and Tunde and Shogun sat together, and you know, you just decided about diversifying the business that you do. Because I think it's even a great analogy when you look at economies around Africa as a whole. You know, one of the biggest issues is that we don't have enough diversification. So if you don't have enough diversification, you're going to get lost along the way. You're not going to, you know, you'll get stuck in a moment. You know, so I think that that's, you know, credit to you guys for that. I also wanted to get into something because there's always this thing that if you're, you know, like if you're a ///, you know what I mean? Like rapper/actor/, you know, it's always going to be like, and you know, it's,
I think I'm the definition of ///.
Okay. You are Mr. Slasher. Let me give you another name. But now, let's talk a bit about, you know, just with regards to The Wedding Party. That was one of my favorite movies. I think I literally watched it like,
oh, thank you.
Yeah. I watched it like six times plus. Even the one theme about, are you a thief or a robber? It's like, what's the difference? that is how much I watched it. But let's talk about getting into acting and just your relationship, working relationship with Mo Abudu, who's one of the, you know, in terms of what she's doing in terms of media in Africa, is phenomenal. Let's talk a bit about that.
So the interesting thing is I'd actually been acting since I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
So all through my school years, I was into music. I was acting. I would star in, sometimes I would write and co-direct the school play, with my teacher. And so it was something that I was always interested from the very get-go, but as I grew older, music obviously was my first love, so I focused more on that. But over the years, some people don't realize that I had done MTV Sugar. I had, you know, done a little cameo in Funke Akindele's movie.
Yeah.
I actually had a recurring role on the final season of Jacob's Cross as well.
Oh, wow.
And so...
Sure.
Yeah, so I had been kind of testing the waters and getting my feet wet and using all of these learning experiences, waiting for the right opportunity to do my own film as an actor and as a writer-director. But in any case, then one day Mo Abudu called me and, you know, as you know, I don't think there's anything that needs to be said that hasn't been said already about how great and how legendary Mo Abudu is.
Yes.
But so Mo Abudu calls me and says, hey, you know, we have this film, Kenny is directing, and, you know, we want you to lead for a part. So, you know, you take that call, obviously.
Yeah, everyone answers her.
Yeah, and so I came for the audition, and I really fell in love with the script, the story. I could see it. Like, I could see it being an incredible project. And I appreciated that they called me to audition because they were taking it very seriously. You know, they weren't just like, oh, you know, here, we have a role for you. Here, we have a role for you, you know. Mm. So I went for the audition, and thankfully I scaled through. And thankfully my wife scaled through as well because she auditioned. And there's one thing I'm grateful to Mo for is that, you know, she put that movie together.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful to Kemi Adetiba because she directed it and it was incredible.
It was,
yeah. And I'm grateful to Tosin and Kideko. And the reason is, I feel like, you know, we created a moment in African art history.
Mm.
You know, like, I feel like in America, if you were part of the people that made, like, Sound of Music or something like that, like, one of those movies that will be around forever, one of those stories that Nigerians from now till Kingdom Come will be proud of, hopefully. One of those movies that everybody just kind of fell in love with.
Mm.
And that I got to play a bit of a role in that, you know, something that I'm very grateful for in my career. I love that film. And it's opened the doors for me to do more films. In fact, I'm just coming off of, I told you I was filming overnight.
Yes.
I'm working on this movie called Up North. And I'm the lead actor and I'm executive producing with a couple other people, and it's an incredible, incredible story.
Sure.
But I don't know, maybe I'll talk about that before the interview is over because I feel like I'm talking too much.
No, please go right ahead. It's totally fine. I think, yeah, I mean, could you talk a bit about what the movie Up North is about? Because, I mean, I don't want to think that I know what it's about, you know, based on everything that's been going on in Nigeria.
Yeah.
Can you give us like a brief picture of what it's about?
Yeah, so Up North is it's directed by Tokwe Oshin.
Mm-hmm.
It's produced by Anakali Films. And it's a story about, it's such an incredible story. Leslie, I have to tell you, like, I read scripts and stories all the time. Like, this story, it just blew me away. And it's about this kind of spoiled, black, rich kid who's, like, living the life abroad. And then his father wants him to come back home and take over the family business. But, of course, he's a rebel and he's not interested in the family business. And so the father cuts off his money and forces him back home. And in their clash, the father punishes him by sending him to do his NYSC, which is like the youth service in Nigeria.
Yeah.
And of course, he sends him to somewhere like remote that the boy has never even heard of, which is a state called Bauchi.
Yeah.
But in sending him to Bauchi to punish him, that experience turns the boy into a man, you know. So he grows up, he falls in love with, like, the community. He falls in, like, he learns responsibility. He falls in love with a lady from the north, and then it also kind of breaks down stereotypes because he ends up training these group of girls, like the school team, the school running team, and they break through that stereotype about girls going to school and girls being able to participate in sports, especially in the north.
Yeah,
you know, because as you know, the north has these connotations and this reputation. Some of it is deserved because that is where the bulk of the terrorism acts in Nigeria have been committed. But also, they're as much a part of Nigeria as Lagos is, you know. And we don't realize, you know, it's frustrating because we don't realize. Like, we tend to look at the North as a different country, or, you know, we've gotten so used to the bombings and all of that you forget that there are children there, you know, there are schools there, there are kids there, there are families there, there are stories there, there's beauty there, there's love, there's joy, there's peace, you know, and so this movie is very ambitious in the fact that it touches on all these things, and it also touches on the beauty of Nigeria, because what people don't realize, you know, I mean, you're in South Africa still, no?
Yes, I am at the moment, yes.
Yeah, so... people go to South Africa and to Kenya for these safari experiences to look at these exotic animals.
Mm.
And people fly in from all over the world and stay at these amazing resorts. And I've done that. I've been to the safari in Kenya. I've been to the Zebula Ranch outside of Johannesburg. I've been to these places, and they're beautiful. And it was so amazingly frustrating to me to know that we have these animals in Nigeria.
Sure.
I saw giraffes, the most beautiful, majestic creatures in Bauchi.
Wow.
So I saw them with my two eyes like this. I see from like if you
because even me, I'm doubting. I'm even doubting when you say you saw giraffes in Nigeria.
Because when we were getting ready for the film, right, and they would send the crew there and they would send these pictures, I thought they were lying. I thought they were exaggerating, or maybe they were stock pictures from Yankari Game Reserve and Sumo Park 20 years ago, but it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
My sister, I went there, I saw it. I saw them with my eyes. I saw donkeys, I saw deer, I saw giraffes, I saw buffalo, I saw, and we only had a couple of days. So if I had more time, I probably would have seen, I don't know, everything, and it's so frustrating that all of this exists in Nigeria, but we just don't know and we don't use it and we don't showcase it. And so we're either known for music, which is fantastic, and art and movies, which is great. But we could be known for tourism. We're unemployment is a huge problem in the country. But we have a massive tourism industry that's dormant, that's not doing anything.
Yeah.
And so this film, I know I've been talking for a while, but this film is about love between a man and a woman, love between a man and his family, love between a man and his community and his country, and about Nigeria, about the beauty and the struggle and the pain and just everything that Nigeria is. And I'm so proud that I'm part of it. And I'm so excited. And I can't wait for the world to see up north. It's incredible.
I actually can't wait to see it either. I mean, a lot of what you said, I think I've been to Nigeria half of my my existence. But it's like, when you describe these other parts of Nigeria, like it's just things that also sound a little bit alien to me, and it's not celebrated enough, So I just think it's really exciting that there's this whole new coming of age and everything, and hopefully through this film up north and just through other things that are happening in Nigeria, and I feel with Africa as a whole, that our stories will be different. Because when we tell our own stories, we dictate how people are gonna see us. So I think that it's really powerful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now,
that's why I love the Wedding Party movie, because it's our story, it's our culture, it's how we do things. Everybody has an aunt or a mom like I
just everybody.
Character. Everybody has, these are stories that we live every day, and these things are happening to us. And when we are able to capture them in the right way, then the world can really see us for what we should be seen as.
Definitely.
Now,
Banky, another thing that that you're quite active in, and I think a lot of people in Nigeria may be aware, but perhaps people around the continent are not quite aware, is that I really love the fact that you're, I don't know if I can use the word an activist, or you just speak the truth to power, or that sort of thing. A lot of what you've done, you've been involved in Occupy Nigeria, which was huge, Light Up Nigeria, Enough is Enough, and there's actually, I saw, it was something you posted on your Instagram, and to paraphrase what you said every country has the leadership it deserves. In Africa, it has been bad leadership and failed leadership, but also a combination of that with citizen apathy. If all of us show up to vote, we will greatly outnumber the ones that are corrupt. Let's talk about the upcoming elections in Nigeria. Let's talk about, why you feel it's important to even just get people to actually register, and this whole idea about voting and registering, from a Nigerian context and from Africa as a whole.
Yes. So I know some people like to use the word activist. I like to use the word, I'm just a concerned citizen with a platform.
Okay.
I'm just a concerned citizen and I have a platform. And if I can use that platform to shift the needle and be part of the progress that I want to see, then that's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what I said, and you paraphrased it excellently, excuse me, is that Africa is a problem of failed leadership, but of citizen apathy. And for many years, I kind of focused so much on the failed leadership, right? So Occupy Nigeria, Enough is Enough, Light Up Nigeria, these were movements that were trying to kind of stir the pot and make noise and shed light on issues that we have with bad governance and failed leadership or corrupt leadership or things just not getting done because the government wasn't doing them. And then, election season started rolling around again, and I had a sit down with myself, and I said, maybe I've been talking to the wrong people all of these years. Maybe I shouldn't have been focusing so much on the government. Maybe I should have been focusing on the people. Because the truth is, the power is with the people. But until the people come together and the people realize that and the people decide to harness that power, then anybody can steal it and use it for whatever selfish purpose that it is.
Mm-hmm.
So in Nigeria, we have a problem. Many of our problems directly impact young people, right? Many of them. Like, young people are starving of opportunity. The educational system is run down. Security, and it's not just terrorism. It's now the police force. Some bad elements in the SARS arm of the police are beating and killing and extorting our young people. And all of these things are facing young people. But young people seem to be content with sitting down and just pointing out the problems on social media. Now, social media is a very powerful tool, but it's not the only tool. In fact, it's just one step of the process. You actually have to come out and be part of the process. And that's what I'm trying to do, is to get young people to realize that with the numbers that we have, we can influence policy. We can make them accountable to the offices that they hold. We can, but only if we take advantage of the numbers. And so if all of us sit down and nobody goes to register to vote, then they have no concern, because they are not concerned about losing their jobs to your vote. They're not concerned. You're not even part of the conversation. They have no need to address you in any way, shape, or form, or address any of the issues that affect you.
Mm.
But it's all of, like, why was Obama able to ascend into the presidency? We're not even discussing what he did as a president, but just the fact that a black man like him was able to become president of America was because they focused on new voters. You need new voters in the system, voters who are not tainted by corruption, voters who are not going to sell their vote for 5K and a bag of rice, voters who are, you know, we, like, there's no, see, the truth is, I'm as frustrated with the way things are in Nigeria as anybody is. But I'm grateful that this administration signed the bill called Not Too Young to Run.
Yes, I thought that was, you're the first country that did it. Yeah.
Yes, and for so long in Nigeria, you had to be basically already an old man to run for president.
Yeah.
Or to run for most electable offices. You basically had to be really old. And it's so counterproductive, because you need somebody who's young, who knows about technology, who knows about what's going on in the world, and who can react dynamically. But just the very law that we had prevented that from happening. So if there's one good thing this administration has done, it said, you're not too young to run, right? So now it's been signed into law, and it's official. Like, you don't, I think the new limit is 30, it's 5, I think, which is great. But that opens the door for anybody for anybody to become a candidate. But for any good candidate to actually sail through the system, we need new voters in the system. We need new people to come in that are not corrupted and tainted and already, you know, sold over to one side or the other side. We need people who care about the issues. Why do we have elections in this country and they don't even debate? Like,
that's true.
You don't even... You want my vote, you don't even come against your main opponent and tell me why I should support you. Like, what kind of insult is that to the young people of this country? The last elections, I think we were trying to... This was around, I think it was when Goodluck was going for his second term.
Yes.
And we couldn't even get, like, the major candidates to come on for an unbiased debate to argue about the issues. We couldn't even make that happen. I think eventually the incumbent president did one with NTA that they basically structured, and he was the only person there. Like, I mean, like, come on. Like, you want the votes of millions of young people in this country, and you won't even tell us what you want to do for us against your opponent. No, we've missed the road. We're lost.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And so my passion now is trying to show as many young people as possible that, listen, this is important. You know, Nigeria is it's ironic, because it's great and terrible at the same time. So we have the success stories like the Wizkids and the Davidos. We have the outliers. We have the surgeon in the States who did the thing about concussion, and, you know, in entertainment and in fashion, we have people that are doing amazing things, because Nigerians themselves are outliers. Nigerians are the most hardworking, passionate, talented people that you meet. But we need to get past the point where it's just those few success stories that we can point to. We need to get to the point where we actually have a conducive environment for the average Nigerian to be okay. The average Nigerian lives on less than a dollar a day. That's like until we get the country to that place, we're not doing good. We're not doing good. We have the most children out of school in the world. In the world, we have the most children out of school.
That's crazy.
And yet our government, year after year, spends the majority of their budget on recurrent expenditure, on running the government. And we were doing that when oil prices were sky high, which was pretty much the only, at the time, the only source of income that we had as a country. And now the prices have crashed. Like, there's no way forward. And so young people need to be, I'm hoping and praying that young people get frustrated enough that we come back to the table. Even if you don't know who you're going to vote for, just register to vote first.
Yeah, exactly.
And then let's sit down together and decide. And let's say, you know what, we have 20 million new voters in the system. Now, if you want these 20 million votes, tell us what you're going to do so that we can hold you accountable for that.
Sure.
So that's
thank you.
Are you really passionate when I'm talking about
this? No, I think it's incredible. But, you know, what's quite interesting is that we've actually seen a shift a lot in the continent with all the work that we've been doing, where a lot of young people have decided that in order to take Africa forward, it just seems, I don't even know if everybody's aware that, you know, what you're passionate about and what you're doing, people around the continent are all feeling the same way. We're like, Africa is in the best and the worst of times at the same time. We need a change. We need this. And it's the young people, you know, that are going to make that change. I think I heard a stat that we're the youngest continent in the world. That's number one. And by 2050, I think every fifth person, if I'm not mistaken, is going to be an African, which means whatever happens here impacts the world. So we, like, at this point in history, have to play a very serious role, you know, and take it seriously and be passionate about the decisions that are made, because, you know, no more, because from now onwards, every decision that is made in Africa impacts the rest of the world. That is the bottom line.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Because, you know what, people, like, having human resources the way that Africa has them can be a gift or a curse. Because if there's opportunity, if there's, you know, if you're harnessing that human resource, if those young people have jobs and opportunities to be entrepreneurs, and, you know, if you have all of that, then it's a gift, right? Because that's why America is so great, because they have so many people.
Yeah.
And so many people are working. China, so many people. So many people are working. But if you do not have opportunity for those people, then you are playing with fire. You're playing with a time bomb. And that's why it's so easy for your Boko Harams and terrorist groups to cultivate people. Because at the end of the day, survival is a basic human instinct. People just want to survive. They want to live. They want to eat. They want to feed their family. And if a man is, or a woman is unable to survive or to eat or to feed his or her family, then
the next person
that gives them food becomes God to them.
Yeah.
And so if Boko Haram is somebody who wants to use terrorism to destabilize the country comes along and he feeds you and takes care of your family, you put a gun in his hand, he will kill whoever you tell him to kill because you've given him food. So how about we just focus on that? How about we just focus on making it okay for as many people in this country to survive and thrive as possible?
Oh, I like that. I'm not even going to add anything to that, because I think that you've said, I mean, you know, what is so, like, what you've said is so pertinent. You know, at Banky, you know, I think you're a nice guy, and generally I support things that you do. Generally, I'm happy for you, but you know, I don't have a jealous,
generally
I support things that you do and I'm like, yay, Banky's winning, but I didn't realize I had a jealous streak until I saw one funny poster of you meeting with President Macron. I was like, what? I literally was like, I'm like, why is this not happening? And I'm not even kidding. Like, I literally was telling people, I'm like, am I the only person who has not met this guy? Like, what is happening? But talk to us about just that whole interaction with President Macron and how all that happened and what the aim of his trip was and what your role was while he was in Nigeria.
Yeah, so I had the, as you rightly said, I had the very high honor of hosting President Macron at the shrine, the New Africa Shrine in Lagos. And for me, that's like a life highlight, you know what I mean? That's not something that I take for granted. You know, it was definitely an honor and a pleasure. And, you know, I felt very blessed, you know, by God and thankful to the Trace family and everybody, Olivier and everybody for giving me that opportunity. And for me, it was a very inspiring experience because, number one, where we did it, right? So the New Africa Shrine, for people who don't know, was built in honor of Fela, arguably our greatest musician in Nigerian history. But Fela stood for so much. Fela stood for, he was like a voice for the voiceless in the struggle against oppression and bad governance, right? And so the shrine, actually in its history, has been attacked by the government of Nigeria. You know, they've tried to bring it down. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the third one, I think. So it has a long history of culture and politics and just, you know, that struggle for the average Nigerian, like we talked about earlier.
Mm.
And that the president of France would come to Nigeria and come to shrine.
Yep.
Like, people in Nigeria could tell you that that's like the marijuana headquarters. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, the shrine represents so much. It represents, like, freedom and liberation and the struggle against oppression. And, you know, so it's like that he would come there. It was iconic and incredible. And yeah, that I was able to host it, for me, was incredibly inspiring. It was also inspiring because of what President Macron himself stands for.
Mm.
I mean, this guy's 40 years old and he's the president of France. He's the youngest president in France's history. You know, he himself, he's a disruptive force. Mm. In a different way, just what the same kind of disruption that Fela was and that the shrine is and that some of us are trying to be. It's like, he represents that. He represents that breaking traditional rules. He represents that young person saying that, you know what, why does this thing always have to be like this?
Yeah.
He represents that kind of rebelling against the establishment and saying, you know what, we need a new way. And so for me, it was personally very inspiring. And I hope that it was inspiring for the young people in Nigeria to see and say, you know what, this guy is not that much older and not that much different than you and I, but look at what he's done with his life.
Mm.
and what can we do with ours?
Yeah.
You know, so it was a great day. It was a great night. It was a celebration of African culture. They're doing this season 2020 thing in France in 2020, where they're going to have like an African celebration. Mm. And kind of just celebrate the relationship and the ties between France and Africa, which are very, very strong. I mean, if you just look at their football team,
I know. See, Africa's going to win.
At the World Cup, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I think it's a beautiful thing. I think it's great for France because it'll help them to see us in a new light. And it's great for Africa as well for us to be able to showcase, again, what we're about and the positive things that we want people to know about us as a continent in a place like France.
Most definitely. Now, Banky, I just have four more questions for you, and then, you know, and then I'll let you go on and do your thing. So the one question is, you know, you've had, I mean, you know, we've not really gone into the details of your career because I think, like I said, EME and you as well, you're one of the most, almost like if you type in your name, so many things come up. So people know your story, you know. I think it was earlier on this year where people found out about your struggle with a rare form of skin cancer and how you overcame that. If you can just talk to us a bit about that from the perspective of, I don't know how to put this, from the perspective of the fact that no matter what you were going on in, you know, in terms of your health, you just always, I don't know, Banky, like you just always kept on. I think that's why people were so surprised when the, you know, when it came out, everyone was like, what? Just talk to us about that fight against cancer, you know, if you care to.
Last year I had my third surgery, on cancer.
Mm.
I have these this cancerous tumor that grew in my right shoulder. And the first instance was almost 10 years ago, and then it came a couple of years later. And then I was good for many years. And then, ironically, last year when it came back, I was preparing for my wedding.
Mm.
So, you know, we'd gone to the States for like a summer holiday, and towards the end of it, I just noticed that it had come back, so I went to get checked, and you know, my fears were realized. And it was interesting because, you know, that's one of the times that, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, the happiest and probably the most stressful in terms of wedding planning and things like that. But it now kind of took on a whole new dimension with having to go back to surgery and treatment and just being out of the mix again and kind of struggling with that. But, you know, first of all, I just thank God because I think that he's the reason that I'm still alive and well, and that he's you know, I don't think these things, you know, these things teach you not to take life for granted, not to take your health for granted. You get to live and breathe each day for granted because it's a gift, man. This life is a gift, and you never really know when your time is going to be up. God forbid. I feel like I still have another 40 years to go, you know. But
amen.
But it reminds you. It reminds you not to take life for granted. And so I appreciate that I even had the funds. I mean, I'm part of this trust fund now called the Pink Oak Trust Fund in Nigeria, and all we try to do is raise as much money to pay for people's bills, for people who do have cancer, because it's an expensive. Cancer surgery is expensive. You know, treatment, chemo, pills, whatever it is that you need to go through, it's an expensive thing. Anyway, so the surgery came, and I did that, and thankfully I'm in the clear now, and by the grace of God, I'll be in the clear forever in Jesus' name.
Amen.
You know, that's all it is. And the reason I shared it, because I remember at the time when I had the discussion with my wife and my family, you know, one or two members of my family were like, you know, maybe you should, you know, this is one of the things that you want to keep private. And I said no. And the reason I said that is because I believe that sometimes God puts you through things to show other people that it is possible to make it out.
Mm.
Sometimes he needs to use people as an example.
Mm.
To say, you know what, if this guy can face this thing and come out on the other side and still be fine and still go on, kick on and do great things, then you can do it too.
Sure.
And I said, you know, what good is it if I go through all of this and I learn all of these lessons about not taking life for granted and appreciating it and believing that no matter what I go through, I can survive and thrive and I can come out the other side and be strong and live a great, healthy, fantastic life. If I just learn these lessons for myself and I don't share those lessons with somebody else, because somebody else is going to face the same scenario, and maybe they just need to know that it's possible to be okay, that it's not a death sentence, that however bad scenario you find yourself in, you can make it out. And as long as you're alive, as long as you're breathing, it's another day to keep doing great things.
Yeah,
and so I had a conversation with them, and you know, they gave me their blessing, and then I shared the story. And honestly, I'm so grateful that not only that I made it through, but that I also was able to share, because I got so much mail from, you know, random people who were like, oh my God, I'm going through the same thing, or my sister is, or my relative is, and, you know, this was so encouraging to read. And that's what it's all about, you know. It's like, how can we use our platform or our lives or our stories or our experiences to help the next guy, the guy coming behind you, who maybe just needs to know that it's possible.
Sure. And I guess that's what life is really about. Hey, it's not even about, it's never about us. It's about the person who's watching us, the person, you know, it's about people in general. That's what life is, you know?
Yeah, God blesses you to be a blessing.
Yeah.
Not just for you to be fine.
Exactly.
You need to be a blessing to others.
Now, Banky, something else. I was actually speaking to my producer, who's like my boss. He's like towering over me. Like, anyway, I said, yo, you know, Banky got his wife. He slid into her DM. He's like, I said, the guy slid into her DM. So all things are possible. All things are possible.
I didn't tell you. If you believe,
it is possible. But now, Banky, I remember.
Yeah, believe it and slide in, my brother. Shoot your shot.
Now, also just to talk about, you know, you and Adesua, you're a beautiful couple, beautiful, beautiful. I remember for a while, everybody was when is Banky getting married? What's this? Bachelor? When Banky gets married, there's going to be a public holiday. Hey, you and Don Jazzy have been abused from the. You know, what was it about Adesua that was where you knew? Because it seemed relatively quick, but what was it about her that you were like, okay, this is what it is? And also, talk to us about the importance of healthy marriages versus a beautiful wedding.
Okay, so shout out to my lovely wife. She's the most beautiful, incredible person that I know, and I'm very, very grateful to God that he brought her into my life. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, okay.
Sorry, the line was flickering. So shout out to my lovely wife. She's incredible. She's the most beautiful, talented, awesome, amazing person that I know, period. And I'm grateful to God for bringing her into my life, and I'm so glad that I waited. You know, it was, she definitely was worth the wait. Oh. Even when everybody was like, "Oh, when are you going to marry?" I'm like, "Please leave me." You know, so yeah, so I'm grateful for that. In terms of, you know, it's funny, people think that it was very short, first of all, but it's actually a 2-year process from when we started talking to when we got married. But for the first year plus, even though we weren't dating officially, we were talking every day, we were becoming closer, we were working on the friendship and the relationship. Like, we were moving, you know, we were progressing towards something, you know. And so actually from the day that we started talking, after we split in DM and, you know, I found a way to get her number, I actually spoke to her every day, till today. Like, a day has not gone by that I haven't spoken to her. Like, from that moment, from the moment that I got her number, we would speak every day, multiple times a day, for long conversations, just kind of getting to know each other and build the friendship and the trust and the relationship. And for us, it was important to put God into that equation. So we actually started praying when we knew that we wanted to be together. We actually started praying about our relationship before we officially kicked things off. Because I think that when you put God in the mix, then it's a more secure bond. And this is, you know, I know there's a whole school of thought that maybe doesn't believe in God, and I'm not enforcing my beliefs on anybody else.
No, but this is your life, so yeah.
About what works for me, you know, and for us. And for us, God was like, he's the most important part of our relationship. And so, you know, and if I can advise couples, don't focus so much on the wedding day, because that's one day, you know, and before you know it, that day is over. So yes, have the wedding of your dreams if you can, you know, enjoy it, have a beautiful ceremony, have fun, take pictures, have the, you know, do your traditional wedding in Lagos, go to Cape Town for your wife and go to Jamaica for your honeymoon, you know, but after all of that is done, it's the relationship that's left, and that's the most important bit. Yeah. So make God a part of that relationship. You know, counseling is so important. Like, there were so many things that we worked through in, like, months of counseling. And I have to thank Pastor Tony and our church, this present house, because they arranged for us to do it. And it was so, so helpful, because those are the tools that we draw on today. Because, listen, you know, I'm as romantic as they come. You know, I'm a lover boy. If you listen to my music career, you know. You know that that's what I'm about. But aside from all of that, you know, nobody's perfect, but you can be perfect for each other. But you have to be able to, you just have to find somebody that that you feel that is worth you striving for perfection with. You just have to find somebody that's worth it, somebody that you want to try with. Because nobody's exactly like you. Even if you found somebody that was exactly like you, even you do things to upset yourself. Like, you do some stuff and you're like, man, that was some dumb ish. Like, why would you, you know what? I'm done with you. Like, you have those conversations with yourself. So there's nobody that you'll find that you will not have some sort of conflict with. But you just need to find the person that you are willing to try. You are willing to try to work on the relationship, try to work and build that life together. And I'm so grateful that I found my wife. And by the grace of God, never let me go.
I love that. This is like, people are like making notes now, because your wife is fine. No, seriously, everyone is like,
"Hey, my wife is fine." Hey, Sky, fresh like today's bread. Are they mad?
Now, Banky, if you can tell us, you know, for you, you spend a lot of time winning. Your life is like a big win. You know, how do you deal with failure?
Say it again. Sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said your life is pretty much a big win in general, but how do you deal with failure?
I think that, you know, here's the thing about failure. It's only failure if you give up. And it's only failure if you stop trying. It's only, you falling down in life, right? Falling down is inevitable, but getting back up is completely optional.
Sure.
And so for me, you know, as good as things look now, there's been years of struggle and trial. There's been years where I've come close to giving up. There's been times where, you know, you hit rock bottom, like you completely hit rock bottom and you're depressed and you feel like you can't go on. But it's in those moments, those are the moments really that separate the people that become successful and the people that just give up. You know, one of those sayings that you hear all the time, but I love because they're completely true, is that the graveyard is the richest place on earth. Because so many people die with their dreams and aspirations and ideas that could have changed the world or changed lives, or, you know, that so many people die with those dreams. And that it's so unfortunate because, you know, that's, you know, listen, I don't know how much, I think we spent so much time that we may need to have a whole other interview about this. But I just feel like my life has not been one big win. Yeah. You know, my life has been a story of determination and a story of saying, you know what, I'm not going to give up on this thing. I remember when I moved back to Nigeria, I moved back Valentine's Day 2008. December 31st, 2008, so January 1st, 2009, I was so, like, beat down and downtrodden. Mm. Because I'd spent all of the money that I had saved from my job in engineering in the States. I had spent it on promo in Nigeria, video shoots, photo shoots, DJ, marketing, you know, all of these things to try and push the music. And I was like, I was dead broke, right? Sure. I was dead broke, like, to the point that I was borrowing 5,000 naira from Shevin Demir every Monday to put gas in one of his cars that he gave me to use. And to buy, you know, credit for my phone just to go out and try and hustle and push the music. Mm. And I was so broke. I was so frustrated. And I was, like, I was at my wit's end because I felt like I had tried everything and the music was just not popping.
Yeah.
And, sorry, I got distracted here. So I went to church December 31st to pray in the new year, as, you know, as my mom taught me. And, you know, I was there saying, you know, people advised me not to come. They said it wouldn't work. And I'm still here. God, please help. Let this 2009 be my year. Let it be great. You know, I feel like this music is going to, this is my destiny. This is where I'm supposed to be in Nigeria. Please just help me to make this thing work. Like, you know, when you write your prayer request down in your Bible.
Prayer points.
You know, that it's like, you have the point of just extreme frustration. Yeah. Like, the car that I was using broke down everywhere in Lagos. Every major road in Lagos, that car had stops. So I was, you know, and I already had videos on television. So people would think, you know, it's funny, our business, fame comes before fortune.
Yeah.
So once people see you on TV, they think you're doing great. I was completely broke and depressed. And then I leave church and I get robbed. I get accosted by armed robbers. And they drive me around, and it's the worst 45 minutes of my life.
My,
like, they beat me up, they roughed me up, they robbed me. Like, it was the most harrowing experience, right?
Sure.
I'm staring down the barrel of a gun for a little under an hour. And so I get home. At the time, I was even living in Chevin Demir's house because I couldn't afford my own place.
Mm.
I was living in a room in an attic because I couldn't afford a place. But God bless him and his wife, because without them, I definitely wouldn't be here.
Mm.
And then after getting robbed, and, like, so now I'm sitting in my room. This is like the first week of 2009, and I'm depressed, I'm sad, I'm in shock because I've been robbed. And just, I'm completely, like, my mental state had never been lower. Despite the fact that I had had surgery on cancer before, that I had been through other things in my life, this was one of those ones where, because, you know, when I was coming out, people would say, oh, don't go, it's not going to work. They don't like your kind of music in Nigeria. If you're not doing Afrobeat, if you're doing Afro-R&B, they're not going to like, you know. So I had gotten all of these words and all of that, you know, and this pushback about moving home. And now here I am. I was already broke. I was already depressed. I was already tired. I was already frustrated. Now I've been robbed. Then somebody that worked in the house got a little tipsy, took this car that I got robbed in, drove it over a gutter and crashed it into a wall, into an electricity pole. This is after I had gotten robbed, right? So now I cannot explain to you, depression is real.
Mm.
Because I felt it.
Mm.
Because I was going to tell you, I was in a sunken place. Like, I was, because I also felt like, man, this is my fault. Like, they told me not to come. I had a great job in America. I left all of that. People advised me that it wouldn't work. And look, it's not working. Like, look where I am.
Mm.
Right? So this was my state of mind. And then the thing about hitting rock bottom is that it can actually be a good thing. Because you know that it cannot get any worse than this. So it's either I die, but if I'm not dead and I'm still alive, then it can only get better from here.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing else that can happen to me now that can make me worse off than where I am. So that I'm still alive and I'm still here, that's good enough. So now we move forward. Right? So I had a conversation with Chego, and he said, okay, what do you want to do? You know, you have to channel this depression and this anger and this frustration. He said, Nigeria will do this to the best of us. But it's the people that can hold on and fight through this that turn it around. And so he said, okay, what do you want to do? I said, I want to work with Cobams, because I had done like a commercial.
Oh, Cobams is incredible.
We had a connection. He's awesome. Incredible human being.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to work with Cobams. But Cobams is expensive. It was expensive then, it's expensive now. Don't let anybody tell you anything different. Anyway, so he said, okay, how much is Cobams? At the time, we weren't really friends. So I called his office. They told me the price. I said, oh, it's X amount. He said, okay. So he went out. He borrowed the money from, I think, his father-in-law. God bless him, too. Came back and gave me the money in a nylon bag in cash and said, here, deposit this in Cobams' account, use this for taxes, just go and make a new album.
Sure.
They didn't understand the last one, and that's what we said. So, you know what? They didn't understand the last album. They didn't get it. Just do another one. Just change the strategy. You know, the goal is still the goal, but there are many ways to score a goal.
Mm.
Maybe the way that you've been trying just is not going to work. Maybe you need to think about it in a different way. And for me, up until that point, I'd always done my production myself with my production partners in Yankee. So I said, okay, I'll start with Cobams. And the first song Cobams and I made was Strong Thing.
Oh, wow. And
that
was...
The next song I made was Lagos Party with Dr. Flabs.
Oh, my gosh. And those are iconic.
Just started happening.
Yeah, those are iconic.
And that's when... Leslie, I was at my darkest place.
Yeah.
You know when they say the dark comes before the dawn? Like, the night is darkest before morning comes.
Mm.
So sometimes, just make it through the night. That's it.
Yeah.
This is your darkest night. Just make it through the night. If you wake up the next day, then you have another chance to turn it around.
Now, Banky, I know that you're the eternal optimist. Just in closing, I have to say, you're a sucker for punishment. Do you still support Arsenal? Like, seriously?
I do.
Seriously. It's like you, no matter what... Arsenal must do something.
Listen, let me tell you what I say at the end of every season. This is going to be the year.
Oh, please.
I believe it.
Becky,
I'm telling
since
you,
I've known you.
No, let me say, I just want to say this. In defense of Arsenal fans worldwide, we had some good years, and then we had some not so good years. And we just needed a fresh, we just needed some new ideas, like a new structure. Like we talked about earlier, you need to change the approach, And we've changed the approach. So everybody give us a little break. Let's see what happens with Emery and the new administration, because we're going to be all right. Wenger, thank you very much. Merci, Aston. We appreciate your work. We also appreciate you finally leaving, and we are going to be okay.
Banky.
Thank you very much.
Banky. See, every time Arsenal's playing, it's like your Twitter feed or people mentioning you. It's like everything goes up. I'm like, what? I'm like, there must be an Arsenal game.
I said the Arsenal punishment in the country. Upon myself.
Yeah.
I'm taking it. I've carried the cross.
See, those guys, they just have to give you like some kind of job. If they can wear like tops that say, visit Rwanda, they need to give you something for all that you've endured.
Thank you, Banky W.
Thank you. Exactly. Banky, thank you so, so much for this conversation. It's, I really was hoping it was going to be incredible, but it's exceeded my expectations. I meant everything that I said.
Fantastic. I'm glad. Yeah. I had such a great time.
It was so awesome. And I meant everything that I said. I think that you definitely are one of those people when history tells the story of Africa and just things that have happened, you're definitely one of those key players. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, guys.
Outside of your love for Arsenal, and outside of the fact that you never invited me when you were hanging out with the president of France, the respect is equal. But thank you so much, Banky.
Thanks, Leslie. Much love. Thank you so much. Had a great, great conversation. Listen, you need to send me a copy. I think I should run this on my platform as well.
No, definitely.
It's a very good one.
Definitely. Thank you so much,
Banky. Congratulations to you and best of luck with the project. Oh. You're an incredible person. I've known and worked with you in many capacities over the years. And you've always been like A1 since day one. You've always been top-notch, classy. You've always delivered the best results in everything that we've ever worked on together. And I appreciate the friendship and I appreciate the working relationship.
Thanks, Banky. You're going to make me cry. But have a good day.
Love you,
love you too, Banks. Thanks so much. Take care. Bye.
All right.
Thank you so much to Banky W for spending time with us. That was hands down one of the best conversations that I've had. It was a little longer than usual, but I think it was definitely worth it. Please do be sure to like, share, and subscribe if you enjoyed this interview. Please go to our Facebook page, which is Africa State of Mind. You can also tweet us at Africa State Mind. And also, please review and rate on iTunes, which is Africa State of Mind with Lee Kasumba. It's been incredible. I can't even say anything more. It's just been awesome. We'll catch you next week with another great episode. Okay, I'm gone.
Africa State of Mind with Lee Kasumba. Get it on iTunes now.